The Richie Allen Show, live in Salford, with me, Richie Allen. You all right, Jar? My guest this hour, I mentioned earlier on, he's been gracing my programmes for many years, and he's great. He has, he's an author, he's a former BBC journalist, and he co-presents, or presents with help, maybe, a terrific radio show out of Bristol every Friday at 5 p.m. Let's welcome back to the programme, my friend and your friend, the Tony Gosling, Esquire. Good evening, sir. Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, right, the one and only Notorious, yeah.
The Notorious Tony Gosling. Now, I did mention earlier on to our listeners, we never have an agenda as such. We generally tend to just kind of go with the flow. And I know you want to talk about Rupert Murdoch, and we will do in 2 minutes' time, but I've got to ask you this, your response. Now, this might sound very local, and just like your brilliant show, the not the BCFM politics show, just like you, we have listeners overseas, and they might think this is a bit local, but it isn't. Bristol announced this week, or Bristol Local Authority, that council tax will rise by 15% again next year. It's happening in Bradford. It's happening everywhere. They're raping us, Tony. What's going on? What's your response to that?
Well, you said it, didn't you? I mean, this is a form of sort of slavery, really, they're doing here. At least that's the way I see it. You're getting less and less for paying more and more. It's that simple. We've now got the Greens in charge in Bristol. So that will probably be rather like Brighton, where the Greens took over for a year and then they got kicked out by the electorate. And so that's the long and short of it. You've got less and less money for local authorities to spend, and nobody really wants to carry. I mean, my own attitude to the, if you're going to collect the bins once a month, you may as well not bother, Richie.
Thank you for mentioning that, because I covered this on the programme the other day. The deputy leader of Bristol Local Authority is a Green Party woman. And, yeah, they're saying we're going to move to a once-a-month collection for non-recyclables. Tony, you know I live in Salford. You know it's very working class, and I'm no snob because I am a working class lad. And people here, the majority of people, are fretting and worrying every week, making sure that they put the right things into the right bins to recycle, but they are being gaslit by their local authority, telling them they're not doing it properly, even though they are. And here in Salford, where it's currently 3 weeks, they want to move to 4 weeks as well. And Tony, some of the streets around here, they look like somebody dropped a bomb. And it isn't just because people are dirty and lazy. It's because of you only get your bins collected once every 3 weeks. What can people do, Tony? I mean, what is the solution for people?
Okay, so what can you do? Not a lot, really. These are taxes that you have to pay every year if you want to live. If you want to, the only people that I know that don't pay council tax are people who've got council tax relief, which is paid by the council, or else travellers. And you know what? We've got a big eviction going on here in Bristol on Monday early morning of 100 travellers and families in caravans. Where are they going to go? These are the only people that don't pay. And by the way, they do get their bins emptied. They've got these big wheelie bins that they put all the rubbish in, and they get emptied by the council every Thursday. So it's not a sort of really scuzzy site at all. In fact, it's quite tidy. But this is the only way, is to not pay the tax. I mean, the idea is you're paying a per head tax to live in a city. The basic things that you expect, sort of public facing things for them to do, while making sure the street lights stay awake, the streets are cleaned and your bins are emptied. I mean, there are other things, obviously, the council does, which you don't necessarily see immediately. But if they're not going to do these things, Richie, I would suggest people just simply don't pay their council tax.
I have a suggestion now, and then I really want to talk about Meghan and Harry. I think you and me were the only people with any sense last week. You and me were the only people rooting for Harry and Meghan, but we'll come back to that in a minute, right? But let's stay with this for a moment. I had a bizarre idea earlier, and do you know what? I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I'm a very private guy, Tony, and I really am very private, and I don't really mix with too many people locally. Partly because, just like yourself, I'm busy and I spend a lot of time reading and researching and what have you. But I'm going to try and find out if there is a residents association where I live. And if not, I'm thinking strongly of setting one up and meeting at the local primary school, which is just around the corner, and asking people to consider en masse that we tell them no more monthly payments of £140. Enough of it. Because, as you said, the very least we should be entitled to is that a road sweeper or road sweeping people keep the place clean and we get our bins emptied. I'm strongly thinking of it, T. Do you have a residence association where you live, you and your lovely missus?
Various residence groups, Facebook groups and this sort of thing. Yes, there are. I mean, a lot of them were run by the council. Then little charities were set up, certainly where I am here in St. Paul's. There was this thing called St. Paul's Unlimited because the council stopped doing these like local committees. And then, of course, what happened was the funding was pulled for that. So over probably 15 years, this has slowly withered down to nothing. Mm. The reason the Greens are in charge here is really because we had a Starmerite Labour mayor, Marvin Rees, for 8 years.
Your old pal.
Who all he seemed to be interested in doing was, sort of very, very much like Rachel Reeves, going up to the big companies and land speculators to say, please just build anything you want everywhere, all over the city. And there was very little done for local people. So that's why people voted Green, thinking that we're going to get something a bit more socialistic or, you know, more distributing wealth, looking after poor people. But of course, the opposite's happened, really. All this council are doing, Bristol City Council now, the Green Run thing, is just managing the dismantling of the remains of what local authorities used to do bit by bit. I mean, even things like educating people with special educational needs. We were at the forefront in taking those that provision away. In fact, it turned out it was unlawful for them to do it. So there was a whole court case here where families and the Liberal Democrats got together with some lawyers and they forced the council to educate people with special educational needs. But this is similar in a way to what's been going on in Ukraine, actually, ever since the coup there in 2014, which is where central government just stops funding local government. Now, the idea is everyone's paying their taxes into to a pot and it's distributed around the country. That's kind of going, really, bit by bit, that money from the whole 2008 bailout crisis with Gordon Brown and George Osborne and Cameron in 2011. They've brought about swinging cuts in funding for local councils. So eventually you end up with just a bunch of people saying, oh God, you know, what are we going to cut next? We've got to cut. Have we still got anything left we can sell off to raise a few pounds? And to be frank, I don't think it's worth standing and being a councillor to do that job, because all you're doing is you're just doing the dirty work of the central government, which was Tory, now Labour, not much difference, of course. It would be better, really, if they were to, at the very least, make a massive fuss about what's going on, rather than to just be resigned to the fact, oh, we've got no money, we're going to just close the city's government down, the provision from local government. I mean, in the background to all of this, what you've got...
Tony, just before you talk about the background, hang on.
Yeah?
Before you talk about the background, you've just opened up another avenue. Very good. Very good what you said there. So why do those who are elected locally, why do they not make a massive big fuss? Why do they not side with the people in their housing estates and in their little boroughs and little towns? Why does the local politician not side with the people and let the cat out of the bag and tell the truth? Why not?
Well, okay, good question. I think it's because there are two main sort of aspects to local government here in our city council, same as every county council, etc. You've got the permanent government, you've got the local civil servants who are, you know, they very rarely change. They certainly don't change if you vote a new bunch of people in. And so they are really kind of running things. You know, the councillors are there to sort of turn up at maybe a public event, and most of the decisions are prepared for the councillors to make by the civil servants.
Well done.
And what they call the council officers. And so they're beholden to the officers. They don't really know what's going on, especially when you've got a fairly new administration like we've got here. democracy is being hollowed out, I think. I mean, that's what I see going on around me. And you're right about the state of the streets, etc. I mean, we've got rubbish all the way down the street here. And we've got a terrible noise going on the whole time as all these student flats are built with the child. We had actually a massive Chinese New Year fireworks display going on for about 4 hours last night.
Jesus.
We've got so many Chinese students here in Bristol. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's just a symptom of what's now going on. Is all of the new developments, almost all of them, are being built for students. The university seems to be running the city. Our former mayor, Marvin Rees, who was a Starmerite, Blairite Labour mayor, he's now got a job as an honorary professor at the university for being so helpful to them. And then the reason the university seems to be running the show is because they've got this guaranteed income, not only from these foreign students, but also from guaranteed loans from the British students that are going to the university. So they've got a guaranteed income nobody else really seems to have at all.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the civil servants acting locally as much as nationally, that's very good. Another of our esteemed guests has told me that on the programme before. You're listening to Tony Gosling, author, broadcast journalist, former BBC journalist, and a bit of a whistleblower, let's be honest, over the years, Tony, as well, an expert on secret societies like Bilderberg, as well as many other things that he investigates. Now, a week ago, more or less, the Duke of Sussex settled a lawsuit with Rupert Murdoch's News Group newspapers for apparently a very large sum of money. And he received an apology from News Group newspapers. Now, many of my listeners, and I'm not criticising them, but a lot of my listeners, they very much like the GB News and Talk TV. So a lot of my listeners would buy into all of this kind of anti Prince Harry, anti Meghan Markle stuff. I've always been very agnostic about it. I have a bit of sympathy for Harry. I think Harry might be in the middle of one long antic disposition personally because of what went on with him when he was younger and his mum and all of that. But I was happy that I suppose we saw yet again light was shone on the filth and the sleaze of Murdoch, one of the most, if not the most influential press barons of all time. You believe it's very important too, but you also believe, I think, that Murdoch kind of got away with it again. Why was this so important last week? I mean, it's had very little coverage, you know, afterwards, the following day, but afterwards the press has basically ignored it. What happened there and why is it so important?
Well, Wednesday the story broke. The Thursday, I spoke to Nick Davis in Brighton, who's the journalist behind the phone hacking story, right? So this is a sort of follow-on from all that. And, I mean, it's obviously like 20 years almost after. And it was Nick that told me that it was a seven-figure sum that had been given to both Tom Watson and, I mean, this is a bribe, basically, not to take him to court. Ultimately, okay, I put out a video just yesterday, which was two former senior journalists, both of whom knew and worked with the Murdoch Group for decades, about what's been going on. And both of them said pretty much the same thing. Laurie Flynn used to work for World in Action, and he wrote a book called Untouchables about dirty cops, bent justice and racism in Scotland Yard, which is an absolutely brilliant insight. And ex-detectives like John Wedger have said, yes, he's got all the names of all the really crooked cops in Scotland Yard in this book. So that's Laurie. Then also, I spoke to Kevin Cahill, who was on the deputy editor of the Sunday Times Rich List in the late 80s. And both of them are saying pretty much the same thing, is that the corruption in Scotland Yard has been driven ever since the Wapping dispute by Murdoch. Because if you remember, there was a very close relationship between Rupert Murdoch and the Metropolitan Police during the print dispute in the 1980s under Thatcher, where all these printers were trying to stop the papers coming out because Murdoch had sacked them all. He was introducing this new technology, they called it, which is basically desktop publishing software. Instead, we don't need printers anymore. We just press a button and the machine does it all on its own, you know. So they're both saying that this relationship between the Scotland Yard and Murdoch started back then at the Wapping dispute, and it never finished. And all the time, Murdoch's gophers, I'm not sure if this is actually journalists doing it, but certainly there were people from Murdoch's empire bribing police officers, giving them basically two salaries in order to, first of all, to give him information about that, that would be useful in news stories that could be anonymized. But more importantly, to, I mean, he's thinking in the back of his mind, murder, please, to stop prosecutions. So if he's got somebody who's on the Murdoch payroll, they're not hardly going to institute charges against a Rupert Murdoch employee. So this has been going on for decades, and it's given Murdoch a massive amount of influence in the police. And that's why I think, even though Murdoch last Wednesday admitted to perjury with him, and there was a great headline, I don't know if you saw it, was, Rebecca Brooks will, all, she's safe all the time Murdoch's alive. Right? So Murdoch's protecting her. So this is, I think, what's going on. He's admitted to perjuring himself, but the police, for some reason, and Alan Rushbridger from The Guardian, now editing Prospect magazine, he was making it absolutely clear on Channel 4 News, on 5 Live, everywhere he could last week. He's saying, why are we just going to allow this to happen? He's admitted to perjury, but nothing's going to happen. There's going to be no rule of law.
Yeah, and Tom Watson,
that's the situation we're in with Murdoch. He's that powerful. And if you think about what's been going on in Gaza and the genocide, the Murdoch Empire, talk TV, talk radio, in this country anyway, the Times
Radio,
Sun, in Australia, all these are Murdoch outlets, and on all of them have been very much pro-Israel, pushing this whole, you know, genocide. And Murdoch himself has got a stake in the Golan Heights, which was stolen by the Israelis from the Syrians. Now Syria doesn't exist anymore.
Hang on. What do you mean Murdoch has a stake in the Golan Heights?
He's a stake in his company, Genie Energy, which has got all concessions in the Golan Heights. So he's got a personal interest in illegal land grabs by the Israelis. And now we've got another land grab yesterday. They said they were going into Syria temporarily. Now they announced yesterday, Ben-Gavir, I think it was, or one of them, in Israel, one of the Israeli ministers, has said, no, we're staying. It's going to be a permanent presence in Syria now. So this is the expansion of Israel into the greater Israel project.
Yes.
So anyway, Murdoch is at the center of all this, is what I'm trying to say, I suppose, in the home front in the genocide, as are the Metropolitan Police. Last weekend, we saw the police arresting people with bunches of flowers going to the BBC and calling them terrorists. So we've got the police and Rupert Murdoch both acting as the home front in the genocide.
Yeah, but hang on a second. The police might very well say, well, do you know what? We must be doing something right, because everybody is criticising us. Because on the one hand, you have synagogue leaders criticising the police for allowing pro-Palestinian people to march past synagogues chanting. So the police are saying, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
Well, they weren't marching past the cinema, but synagogue.
Cinema.
They weren't marching past the synagogue. It was two streets away, for a start. And secondly, this is just an excuse. The Israelis are they're failing in all sorts of ways to convince the world of the righteousness of their cause. But what they can do is use a bit of leverage within the London establishment to try to, get their way with the cops in order to harass people like Jeremy Corbyn, Piers Corbyn, John McDonnell, the Stop the War people, from doing, basically exercising their fundamental right to protest outside the, and of course the BBC is also in the crosshairs ever since Owen Jones did his rather nice little takedown of the BBC over Christmas, where he's explaining that several of these senior BBC people are quite clearly and obviously biased. Not just biased, but also people who are connected to the Israeli war machine, you know, and the CIA.
But that's hardly news. It's hardly news, is it? The BBC being pro-Israel, it's always been pro-Israel.
No, but they should have the right to have a protest outside against the BBC. Look, I mean, the BBC aren't as bad as Sky, or it's not Sky, sorry, Talk TV, Talk Radio, or the rest of the Murdoch Empire, but they are supposed to be publicly accountable. That's why they wanted to do a protest, and they should have been allowed to do a protest there, you know, to really hold Rafi Berg and Deborah Turness, who's their head of news, their feet to the fire. Absolutely brilliant protest. But they weren't allowed to do it because of the Met.
Tony, the Palestinians are arriving in northern Gaza, and the apartments they lived in have disappeared. They're dust now. And at the same time, the current US president is suggesting that they be taken in neighbouring countries. Now, look, my feelings about Israel are very well known. I would say that Trump has been persuaded by the Israelis to do as much as he can to get these people out of the country with an empty promise that we'll build it and then you can come back in, when in reality they'll never be allowed back in. How do you see it?
Well, it's difficult with Trump. It's ever so difficult to know how, which direction he's going in. It's quite clear he was looking at it as a sort of, the other day he was talking about it as a sort of great real estate opportunity, wasn't he? I mean, this is a little bit worrying. Oh, yeah. Great. You know, we bulldozed this place. Why don't we just flatten it and build some condominiums and sell them on the open market? Look, this is stolen land. And obviously a massive genocide's been going on here. I'd like to say something a bit about the Zionists, because I'm starting to think that Zionism itself isn't really the problem. I mean, there is two completely different aspects. There's the political Zionism and religious Zionism. So the religious thing is nothing new. I mean, they've been praying in the Amidah prayer in synagogues for hundreds of years. This is about the requesting that God help them return to Israel. But they've been praying this prayer, the Jewish congregations, for a long, long time. And what's happened is God hasn't done this yet. And so it seems to me what's happened is over the last 100 years or so, they've decided, well, we're fed up with waiting for God. We're going to do it ourselves. And so they've set up this secular organization, political Zionism, in order to force it to happen. Now, that seems to me to be the heart of this problem, is that if you're going to do it, it's got to be something which is led by the spiritual force, not by guns and manpower and by people like Netanyahu. So that's the sort of first thing to say about what's going on over there. I'm starting to think that actually I interviewed a guy who's a rabbi in Jerusalem. He's actually born in LA, but he's trying to do as much as he can to get peace, to force peace. And he's been involved in the demonstrations and this sort of thing over there against Netanyahu. But these people are caught between a rock and a hard place, because they believe that Jews should be in Jerusalem, but in certainly not exclusively, and certainly not killing people. So those are the people I'd like to just sort of remind your listeners that they do exist. These religious Zionists who actually want peace and they want to have a state there too, but not an exclusive state. So those people seem to have been completely forgotten in all this, Richie, in much of what we've seen over there.
Yeah, because as you and I well know, it doesn't matter which geopolitical issue you are debating, it is complex. There are complexities. And sadly, in much of the media and the independent media, the complexities are ignored. I totally agree with that. You're right to categorise it as a genocide. It is a genocide. I shudder to think what the number of dead Palestinians will be when the cleanup is eventually, you know, on and has been going on for some time. It might be more than 100,000, and most of them will be women and children. And I don't believe they'll ever have any justice. I don't believe for a minute that the IDF commanders or the executive there in terms of Netanyahu and his defence minister, I don't believe they'll ever be held accountable, Tony. And it's a terribly depressing and, what's the word I'm looking for here now, total lack of optimism on my behalf.
Well, I'll tell you where the optimism is, and I do see it as optimistic. I know there's a lot of death and carnage involved, but up until this genocide, I think the Israelis had quite a lot of cachet around the world. I mean, I wasn't a great supporter of them, but I think that their support has completely crumbled away. I don't think anybody in their right mind can look at that situation and that state now and say they're anything but a nuclear-armed doomsday cult. You know, they're really a pariah state, a rogue state, and they need to be put back in the box. And it's appalling the UN has done so little to do that. But, I mean, as for Trump, I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see. It's really difficult to know. He's obviously been behind this current ceasefire, which I can tell you because I'm in touch with people in Palestine. They are, thank God, you know, they're really pleased that this is finished. Now, that doesn't mean to say that Trump's in any way a good guy, but he also seems to be averse to having a war with the Iranians. He talks a lot of bad things about them, but he doesn't seem to want to go along with Netanyahu's attempt to actually get a war going with Iran, which is what Netanyahu seems to want. So Trump is an unknown quantity. I rather like him because, you know, it's a bit like Margaret Thatcher versus Tony Blair. He's going to tell you what he thinks. You get what he says on the tin is what you get with Trump. And also, if he's saying something, you know that's what he actually does believe, rather than, you know, he's lying to the whole world about his real intentions. Someone like Biden just reading from an auto cue, who hasn't got any intentions. He just does what he's told.
Our Trump-supporting listenership will be singing hallelujah. Trump gets a bad review, or mostly gets bad reviews. Look, you know my ultimate theory. I shouldn't say ultimate theory. My lifelong theory is that these guys are only messengers, and there are people behind the scenes pushing and pulling them and telling them what to do and say. But look, Tony, there's so much more I want to talk about. But before I do,
let me just say something about Mandelson quickly.
But before you do, hang on.
This is really important because it will tell us who. Because I always ask this question: who's in charge, Britain or America? And everyone says America. Oh, the Americans. Britain is just a part. Listen. We created America. We have, I think, a lot of influence there. And what happens with Mandelson will be, I think, a fascinating, because, you know, they're talking about they don't want him to be the ambassador. He certainly should never have been the ambassador. He's a political appointee. Ambassadors should always be professional civil servants, but they've decided, you know, through this crooked Starmer lot that he's going to be the ambassador. The question is, can the Americans block it? Now, that, I think, will be a litmus test as to who is in charge. If Mandelson becomes the ambassador permanently, that means the Brits are in charge.
Come on, will you?
For somebody with your brain,
that's about the most simplistic. Apologies for that sound. I just tried to bring up the Telegraph homepage there. But I forgot that they're covering the RFK confirmation hearing. No, the reason I wanted to do that is because Mandelson has made a video basically saying, the things I said about Trump were wrong. And it's on the Telegraph page today. Yeah. I'm really sorry about that. Look, for listeners who don't know, they really need to familiarize themselves with who Peter Mandelson is. You're talking about evil incarnate. In my opinion, anyway, I'm going to read a few comments because, as usual, you inspire, you cajole, you wrangle. And listeners, very quick one, quick as you can, before I get to the comments about council tax. Theodore asks, please ask Tony why his great radio show is no longer available on Apple Podcasts. Why, T? What's going on?
Well, because someone was putting it up on Apple Podcasts. And if your listener would like to pinch it from Radio 4 All or wherever you can find it and just upload it to Apple Podcasts, do feel free. We had someone who was doing that for us, and maybe they've just stopped doing it. I'm not sure.
Right. Yes. It's a community, folks. The Not the BCFM politics show, the Not the BCFM show is a community. Help out where you can. I mean that. Marion.
It's a sort of DIY culture. I mean, that's the idea. If you can see something's not happening, do it.
Fix it. Exactly. Marion says, listening to Tony Ritchie, where is the accountability for the mismanagement of council funds? Wait for this. I didn't know this now. And I do take a real interest in local politics, even at the expense of national politics. Thurrock Council in Essex spent around £500 million investing in solar farms in other counties. And now they're stone broke. Where are the audited council accounts? It's an in-our-faces piss take. Well, before Tony answers this, Tony, that's not just at local authorities. Isn't it the case that over the last 20 years, no accountant would sign off the European Union's own accounts because they're basically filthy and money mismanaged and money missing at every bloody turn? I think that's a general statement, but I think it's the same there. She says Thurrock Council spent £500 million investing in solar farms in other counties. How could they get away with that?
Well, I mean, if they've invested that money in solar farms, something must have gone horribly wrong, because it's a very easy way to make money.
Is it, though?
The
sun doesn't shine here.
The price of electricity is pegged to the nuclear price now. So the idea, of course, is that wind farms and solar are cheap to generate. And the profits from it are great because you're being paid as if you were generating nuclear power. And so I'm amazed that if they've been investing in these solar farms, unless the wind has come along and blown them away or something, it's been some sort of disaster, that they're not able to make money at it. But of course, that is just gambling, really. They're gambling with your money and my money. And that's not what councils are there for. They're there to make sure there isn't, there aren't sort of questions about whether or not they're going to be able to pay for the local schools, whether they're going to be able to empty the bins and all that sort of thing. They're not there to gamble.
Fair enough.
Also, central government is doing exactly the same. Look at what's been going on with Hinckley C just down here on the Somerset, on the coast, the Bristol Channel. That initially started, it was going to cost £25 billion. It's now up over £50 billion. And it's a similar thing with HS2, which is double the price. That was supposed to be £50 billion, and it's now coming up to £100 billion.
Well, they've scrapped
it,
haven't they?
So these sorts of projects are all just running away, way over cost.
Yeah, it's filthy. I think HS2 has been scrapped. I could be wrong, but I think it has been. Here's one from Mac. Remember, councils are actually corporations. Where is my contract? I don't have a contract, he's saying. Why am I being charged? Scaramouche. There's a name for you now. Bristol Waste Collection has been involved in big fraud. A sixth person was arrested a few months back, according to the local news, Bristol Live. I'm guessing Bristol Waste Collection is a company that has been appointed by Bristol Local Authority. And he reckons there's some fraud going on there. I don't know. He says people have been arrested. It's filthy. Local politics must be filthy. It must be mafia stuff, Tony.
I think it kind of is, and probably Masonic too. These are the sorts of connections. I'll get you a deal. Basically, our country, I mean, certainly here in Bristol, I can tell you many of these things were set up. We had a housing organization, a waste collection organization, and another one which escapes me right now, which was set up by the previous council, but they were arm's length. So they set the organization up, but it was independent. And Bristol Energy. That's right. They were supposed to be providing cheap energy. The whole thing has been an absolute disaster. In fact, I think it was about £50 million, which is a lot for a local authority to lose on Bristol Energy. They just poured good money after bag with massive salaries for these mates of theirs. And then they had to just wind the company up and sell it off. So this, I think, is a deliberate sabotage of local government. And there isn't, if you think about it, the local cops who should be investigating this, who pays their wages? Well, the local council do.
Local authority.
Are they going to investigate the local council? Are the police going to investigate the police in London? Are they going to investigate the police that didn't investigate the corruption here? You know, so I think we've got a kind of cliques running places. And this, of course, fits in quite nicely with the Freemasonry. Because this, although, of course, when it was originally set up, it was a great idea, it also provides a very close-knit group for organised crime to operate within. And in fact, thinking about it, there was a report in Scotland Yard years ago, must be, God, decade ago, saying that much of the corruption was facilitated by Masonic groups within Scotland Yard, Freemasonry. So who knows? But
How many times have you been accused of being a Freemason in your career? I've been accused of it 25 or 30 times, yeah. Makes me laugh.
Not many, no.
I have.
Because I'm quite, known as an anti-Mason.
Well, you are, but I was proposed for membership in Nottingham, would you believe, years ago. I nearly bought a pub called the Pheasant Inn in Radford in Nottingham. And there was a lovely local guy who sadly passed away. His name was Alan. And Alan was a Mason. He was a Mason. And he said, I'll propose you for membership, Richie, if you do take over the pub, you know. And by that stage, Tony, I'd been doing talk radio programs in Spain, speaking to you and others, the great Jim Mars and the late great Jim Tucker, God love him, your friend. And I was speaking to all these people. So I had an idea that maybe the Masons wasn't the best thing in the world. But what I did discover was, speaking to Alan, is that there are levels to Masonry. Like, Alan wouldn't be any sinister, shadowy figure. Rest in peace, by the way. He was just a guy who, at his level of the Masons, it meant that the wheels were greased a bit quicker and the wheels turned a bit faster. And that's what he said to me. Get you into the Masons and, you know, when you need certain things done for the business and you need certain access, He said it'll be yours. They didn't ask me to slaughter any babies now or anything like that for membership or to drink some goat's blood. You know what I mean? So the Masons, tell us what you think, Tony. I mean, you're an expert. This is your, it's part of your life's work, really. On the local level, the Masons are fairly harmless. Are they?
Well, no. I think here, for example, in Bristol, it's a former Templar port. And you've got some very senior Freemasons. These people are the people who kind of own the city, run the city. We've got a thing here called the Merchant Venturers, which has been around since the 1500s, which is constituted under a royal charter. I mean, we call them the local Illuminati because they really are like that. And they're completely aloof from everything. They never, ever have to do a day's work in their life. And if you're they just sort of run investments. They say that they always give back to Bristol more than they take. But then you look at everything that's being taken away from us, public toilets, bin collections, everything. You think, well, what are they actually giving?
What are they doing, yeah?
And they use the same terminology as Freemasonry. So we're talking about the master. So he's the person who's the head honcho for the capo for the year. Then you've got your senior warden. He's going to be the master next year. The junior warden, the same thing. And also the link to the Templars, I don't take lightly. I read a book a few years ago called Born in Blood by somebody, Morris Robinson. But it's a fantastic, I mean, he's a Mason himself, and he writes all about how he traces all of the origins of Freemasonry in the 1700s, right the way back to the extinguishing of the Templars in the 1300s, and how for several years, including things like the Order of the Garter they used to hide in when that was created. And so the connections with the Templars, I think, are pretty definite. But of course, they've got outer porticos. Anyone can join that. And then those are used really for kind of favors for friends. And you're greasing the wheels a bit. I mean, I could tell you a story about a friend of mine who was a Mason in the army in Germany, and he was a captain, and some of his men radioed through to he was a whatever duty officer or something that day, and his men said, "We've just lost a heavy machine gun and five boxes of ammo."
Jesus.
In a council estate in Germany. So immediately they got hold of the local German police. Spent the next hour going around some houses, knocking on doors. Where is this gone? I mean, they'd gone in to get some cigarettes and left the Land Rover open, and these kids had come and stolen.
Nicked the machine gun. Wonderful.
And what he explained was, when he turned up on the scene about an hour later, the senior inspector from the German police who was there, he shook his hand with a Masonic handshake. They exchanged a few code words about, I think it was, he said it was, how old is your mother?
Wow.
And that means right? Your mother lodge. And that your mother might be 250 years old, you know. But that's just normal in this code speech. Anyway, the machine gun and the ammunition was found within 3 or 4 minutes. Because the local police knew who had it, but they weren't going to cooperate. And as soon as they realized that the British guy from the British Army was a Freemason, they found it straight away. So this is, it reminds me a little bit of the Man Who Would Be King, the film that was on over Christmas, actually, with Michael Caine, where he goes out to Asia somewhere. Is it Nepal? And then he has this sort of handshake or whatever with a group similar to the Masons. And then they think he's, you know, he's their god, and they make him a god. So I think these cults are all over the place, and they use similar kind of secret forms of communications, which is why I think ultimately it's satanic. That doesn't mean to say everyone that's a Freemason is that a Satanist. Of course not. But I think at the very top, these organizations are, it's a kind of organized selfishness. Really,
and yeah, I've heard
whether there is human sacrifice still goes on, I've no idea.
But I wish
it might do on some level.
It might do. I wish I'd eventually gotten into that pub. On one level, I wish I had done so that I could have been proposed for membership, and then I'd be able to speak about it from the point of view of, well, this is what happens, this is what the initiation is, this is what, you know, what I experienced. But I didn't. Now, when I do phone-ins fairly regularly, as you do yourself. And I did have somebody on last year who spent some time as a Mason. And the chap who came on spoke well, didn't seem to be bullshitting me in any way. And he gave a fairly interesting account of his experience. I'd like you to do me a favour, my friend. Stay there, because I've got to do something. I've got to take a very quick break. When we come back, you will hear more from the great Tony Gosling, live in Bristol, great friend of this programme's. And Tony, you are the longest, most recurring guest on any of my shows, going back to the mid to late noughties. That's a lovely thing, that, isn't it? I think it's...
Well, I'm the most annoying person who's always nagging you, probably.
Not at all. No, you don't nag me. I invite you. He never invites himself on, by the way. I do the inviting. To be fair to Tony, he's never once asked me to come on. I do the inviting. But no, I love it.
No, I did. I did. When I found out about Nick Land, this is my old school friend, I definitely did. Because, I mean, this is the guy who's the father of accelerationism, living over in Shanghai. But that probably is the only time.
Maybe the only time in, well, nearly 15 years. Stay there, the great Tony Gosling. Thisweek.org.uk, Bilderberg.org. The Not the BCFM Politics Show will be live this coming Friday at 5 o'clock. It's outstanding, don't miss it. Back in exactly 70 seconds. Now, that's not too long to wait, is it now?
Your body's immune system is under constant attack from flu, respiratory diseases, and the common cold. And as we all know, vitamin D3 plays a vital role in maintaining a robust immune system. Now you can boost your immune system with Immunex 365, our unique formulation that combines effective levels of vitamins D3, C, and K2, as well as zinc and quercetin. This unique combination of nutrients in Immunex 365 ensures maximum bioavailability of D3, thereby giving your immune system an optimum boost. Or try our new Immunex 365 gummies, which are formulated specifically for children and young adults aged from 9 to 17 years old. Remember, all NutriHealth 365 orders come with free 2-day track delivery. Go to NutriHealth365.com to get yours now. That's NutriHealth365.com.
The Richie Allen Show features doctors, scientists, academics, and researchers who have been banned by the legacy media. Support Richie now by making a financial contribution at richieallen.co.uk.
Yeah, as long as I've been in radio, I'm still playing and firing the wrong bloody jingles. Tony Gosling is our guest. Tony, stay there. Come back in a sec. Ray from Edinburgh. Good evening, Ray. Over 36% of council tax money goes to the gilt pensions of former councillors. I didn't know that. I'm thus educated again. Martin has been on to say, we all want a saviour. He says, bollocks to that. And bless Gaza's children. Amen to that. No doubt about it. Hi to Grace Ann. No matter how bad things get, Richie, we need to concentrate on what's happening in our own lives and make the best of any situations we are in. In reality, they do not care about us. And in honesty, we don't care about them. It's only us individuals that can make any difference on a small level in our own life. That's very interesting. Hi to Carla, who's been reading Tombland by C.J. Sansom. It's historical fiction based in the 1500s about the Peasants' Revolt. Carla says, never mind Farage, Bobby Kennedy Jr., Trump and all the rest of them. We need another Robert Kett, although they were still ultimately squashed. I wish people knew their history and their power. And she goes on to recommend the Shard Lake series of books. Tony, if I kept reading these, we'd run out of time, but lots of them are coming in. We triggered people when we talked about the malfeasance of local authorities. So I know nothing about him. I know nothing about him. Nothing.
Well, he was around in the mid 1500s, and he was a landowner. This is during the time of enclosures where our ancestors were being booted off the land and forced to go and kind of work in towns. And I mean, we'd had security of tenure in the old feudal system for centuries. And so they decided they're going to build an empire. So we're going to need to kick all these people off to make them, sort of indentured workers. We can get more out of them like that. And they also wanted to turn all the land over to sheep. But Robert Kett said no, and he got together with a whole bunch of...
The call has just dropped out. I'll call him back, and we'll get him back momentarily. He might have just moseyed on into an area of low coverage. Tony, you're back. Thank God. This is really good. Are you there? He's not. Tell you what I'll do. I'll end the call, and I'll start it again, and I won't put my fader down this time. What's wrong with me? That's two mistakes for the price of one. Tony Gosling is a broadcast journalist and author who brings us every Friday at 5 o'clock a terrific program called Not the BCFM Politics Show. Tony, you're back.
Sorry, yeah, I don't know how much you heard of that. I got an incoming call here.
That's what happened. No problems. We missed about 15 seconds. You were talking about Robert Kett and these plans.
So anyway, eventually they threw down all of the fences. In other words, pulled down the fences, filled in the ditches that where they'd been enclosing the land and privatizing it, basically, in a nutshell. This is 1549. And he rounded up and locked up the landowners for stealing the land in Norwich Prison. And so you had all of the sort of people who've been doing all this privatization in prison. And eventually the king sent one army, they beat them off, and then he sent another army, and Kett was, hanged from the walls of Norwich by chains and died. But, I mean, you know, this was the Peasants' Revolt, interestingly, this book, Born in Blood, says was a kind of false flag operation by the Knights Templar. I don't know. I don't know if I believe it. But one thing that's for sure is the Templars got a lot of their confiscated property back during the Peasants' Revolt.
Was that against Richard the Second? You're talking 14th century now, aren't you? The Peasants' Revolt, right?
Yes, 13 something or other. Yeah.
Yeah, I did know that now.
But anyway, I mean, this battle for land has been going on for centuries, and we've now got Bill Gates and BlackRock weighing in. You know, they want the land off the farmers, and so it's the same old thing. When you have land, you've got security of tenure. No one's going to boot you off if you own your own land, and so that's the one thing they seem to want to take away from us.
Right. So how is Bill? So let's stay with this. Let's finish with this for the final 15 minutes, because this is important, hugely important. Food security. I hate when they coin terms like the UK Food Security Agency and the UK Health Security Agency. It's deliciously Orwellian and dystopian. We know exactly what they're doing. Farmers turned up to the Rachel Reeves speech today. Her "I'm going to bring lots of growth" speech, right? Load of bollocks. Anyway, farmers are outside protesting. For listeners overseas who don't understand, what is happening? Why are farmers up in arms, number one? And number two, what does the massive hedge fund conglomerate BlackRock and Bill Gates, what have they got to do with it?
Well, look, a lot of the changes in the countryside, the opening up of planning and development and the solar farms, etc., are all funded by these massive hedge funds, private equity firms. So they're kind of front organizations for BlackRock, really. So the reason the farmers are upset is because inheritance tax is totally, I mean, they're already on the back foot because it's very difficult to make money as a farmer because of the supermarket's control over pricing. I mean, what they described to me, I'd not heard the term before, but they said, one of the farmers said it, that we are price takers. We don't have any negotiating power. We just have to take the price we're given for the milk, the cereals, the meat, whatever. And so that's why they're upset. It worries me that they're not being militant enough like the French, because it seems to me that the public have not been convinced that the farmers are as important as they are.
Why? I mean,
obviously,
this
has been going on for centuries. Family farmers, families have been owning land for centuries. But with the inheritance tax, the corporations don't die, do they? The trusts, if you've set up a trust, that doesn't die. So it's only if you own the land yourself and it's actually your land to do what you want with that you're going to get taxed. That's why it's so unjust. This is human beings are being taxed out of existence, whereas corporations are not, you know, so they move all their assets around and that sort of thing. They can avoid tax, but humans can't.
But you can't.
It's because humans can't run away and they do die. That's why this is such an unjust tax on the farmers.
Talk to us about Bill Gates' interest in recent years in buying up large swathes of great big tracts of land, as a great comedian once wrote in a great film. Why and where is Gates and his cohort buying up land?
The reason Bill Gates wants it is the reason all powerful people want it, is because land is the source of all wealth.
It has nothing
Simple
to do, but you don't think it has anything to do with Gates' interest in climate change?
He wants power, money, control. I mean, if you control the land, you control the people who are living on that land. So that's what they want. They're privatizing planet Earth.
This guy was a software developer. That's what he was. And then all of a sudden he became filthy rich. And then he became the nicest philanthropist in the world with his wife, allegedly. I'm not saying I believe any of this. And he was going to fund benevolent programs all over the world. Now he's turned into a James Bond villain. I mean, some of his behavior during the pandemic was nothing short of astounding in terms of the things that he was advocating. You know, basically tying people down and jabbing them if they didn't want one. So how did he get from there to there, Gates? He's a very interesting character, isn't he?
Well, yeah, but he would never was particularly a software person. He was just a agent for CIA and for the American establishment. He was going to be the person who did what they wanted, which was to develop a computer operating system that they would have control over and that they had backdoors into. And so everyone that started to use it, I mean, it was a monopoly, wasn't it, really? I mean, it's become a monopoly. It still is a monopoly, which we've just got rid of the boss of the Competition and Markets Authority, you know, because we believe in monopolies now, apparently. But the idea is that everybody that uses a computer has to use the Windows. I mean, we use Linux, by the way, on our show. But this allows the NSA and other security services, whatever, to have backdoors into your every computer via as you plug into the internet. Remember the 9/11 attacks where they were saying, is this real world or is it an exercise? They had all sorts of weird blips appearing on their screens because there are backdoors into all these Windows systems and they can do pretty much whatever someone remotely can do pretty much. They can hack into pretty much whatever they want. I mean, once you've got AI in charge of that, God knows what direction we're going.
And is that, you think, the primary reason for governments announcing enormous expenditure on artificial intelligence development? Because I'm suspicious, obviously. I wouldn't be doing this program otherwise. I look at a future world where we have digital currency. We have no cash anymore. It's all gone. We have maybe universal basic income because there aren't too many jobs for people. And I see artificial intelligence managing that and managing people and people's behavior, even down to the very small things, like everything you do, like any doctor you want to see, it'll be an artificial intelligence chatbot. If you want to have a conversation with a counselor because you're feeling particularly low that day, it'll be an artificial intelligence chatbot. So when they say $500 million for AI, and they say it here in the UK, I don't see it's going to benefit humanity. And it's going to improve our quality of lives. I think it'll be more a what's the word I'm looking for here, Tony? It'll be a surveillance thing more than anything, will it?
Well, look, I interviewed David Livingstone about this last week, and he said this has been their dream ever since the year dot. They being the Satanists, they being occultists, that they've been talking about this idea of creating life. And once they can create life, they believe that they are gods. They have become gods. So this is a sort of diseased dream. And I mean, I don't know if you've been listening to some of the AI recently. I honestly think we had Dominic Cummings saying something similar just before Christmas, you know, Boris's chief advisor, that this is already running things.
The singularity.
I mean, you listen to Rachel Reeves' speech earlier today. It could easily have been written by AI, and we wouldn't necessarily know about it. Maybe policies being developed. But at the end of the day, that's, I think, what they're trying to do is they're trying to simulate. They've got a simulation of life, and they're trying to convince us that it's as good or better. And I say they, what I'm talking about is those who have invested in it and are investing in it. People are putting loads of money into this. It's almost like some kind of weird sci-fi dream that's a self-fulfilling prophecy because all the people with money think, oh, this is inevitable and it's bound to happen. It's going to be great. Well, what we've just seen over the last couple of days is the Chinese cloning something, saying, oh, this is our own thing, and billions, hundreds of billions being wiped off the value of AI businesses. So again, it's,
yeah, but hang on, I smell a real rat. Tony, I smell a rat there. I smell a rat. So I've been reading quotes from Donald Trump about this, about the Chinese. It's called DeepSeek, I think, the Chinese chatbot. So DeepSeek. And now they're bitching about it, but they're speaking out of both sides of their mouths because this was open source stuff. They released ChatGPT and they said to everybody in the world, use it. And if you want to add to it and if you want to develop it yourself, go ahead. So I don't see what they're complaining about. Do you know what I mean? What are they whinging about? It's open source stuff. And the Chinese just did what anybody else would do. and said, all right, we'll piggyback on that.
Well, I know, of course, I'm totally behind what the Chinese, of course, the Chinese have been doing this as well.
Yeah.
These people are basically just believing their own propaganda about how great they are and how great their investments are. But I think we need to be really careful about what is AI and what isn't. AI is quite capable now of doing interviews a bit like the one we're having now, having people discussing sounds incredibly realistic. And so quite a lot of the content, news content, et cetera, that's coming out, I think we need to be told, is this really
absolutely
AI or not? And if we aren't being told, we need to develop a sense for figuring it out. The one thing, by the way, that it can't do, David explained, is irony, or if you're lying, it thinks you're just telling the truth. It doesn't understand lies, and it also doesn't seem to understand irony or humor. So there are all sorts of aspects to being human that the AI just simply hasn't got its head. Maybe this will be another generation.
I have a question for you. We don't expect AI to be conducting any polygraph tests in the near future. Right, so another question for you on that. Friends of mine, I want to name two people. A guy called Nick Ripley, who is the brother of Paul Ripley, my mate from Fab Radio. Nick is a genius now, and he's well-versed and briefed on all of this stuff. And I have a friend and listener in Spain, in Malaga. Her name is Elizabeth. Incredibly clever woman when it comes to this and software. They, both of them say, and they're not Freemasons, and they're not shills, they say the singularity is basically bollocks. They're not, whatever they might think, these Satanists, they're never going to create actual life. A fully self-conscious computer program that is aware of itself and, you know, and is a living thing with feelings and ideas and desires. It's never going to happen. It'll become brilliant at mimicking us. And that's about it. That's what they say. But what does your friend Livingston say about the singularity?
Well, I think all of these people are correct. This is a delusion that this AI is going to, I mean, you have to remember in the background to all this, Richie, we've got AI involved in doing targeting in Ukraine, in North Africa,
yeah.
Drones, targeting drones. So what it seems to be able to do, you can plug it into, say, a war game,
yeah.
You know, and it thinks it's a war game and it can try and win like a computer playing chess. But when it actually comes to having any kind of ethical dimension to what it does, this is a bit like the sort of Asimov science fiction, you know, Kubrick thing, is it doesn't really seem to understand ethics at all. So it will try and win the game. You have to just tell it how to play the game and it will try and win it. But it will be extracting the soul from all of the decisions that it's trying to make. So that, I think, is going to be the signature of AI. If you want a world with no soul, then let's just hand it all over to the AI to do what it wants with. And remember, of course, look, it has to be trained, this AI. It can't just do it without knowing. So it will be being fed loads of articles. It will be being fed loads of interviews like this interview we're having now in order to learn how to speak, learn how to think, if you can call it that, or pretend to think. And through masses and masses of stuff which has been being fed into the AI, OpenAI researcher, whistleblower, was found dead just before Christmas in San Francisco. Sukhir.
And on that bombshell, he dropped out again. Somebody's trying to ring him. It's funny that he'll have to change the notifications on his phone. And this is proof that this is a live radio show. If it wasn't, be jeepers, we would be editing that out, wouldn't we? Are you going to edit it out for the podcast? Shit, no, I'm not. I have too much to be doing. Tony Gosling is our guest. He's getting rid of that phone call now, and I'll give him a quick ring back when I can. Your comments, your messages, please, to richieallen.co.uk, the contact form, or use the app. Download my app and speak to me that way. We will know if artificial intelligence chatbots are listening to programs like this, because, can I get Tony? Yeah, he's back. No, he's not back. Hang on. We'll know if they're listening to me and Tony, because chatbots will start speaking like me. Oh, yeah. I was just thinking, Tony, we'll know in the near future if conversations between us are included in the machine learning, because you'll hear bots speaking like me, Tony. Yeah. You'll hear an artificial... fantastic.
Horrendous interruptions. Simulated interruptions.
But also horrendous accents. Your AI chatbot will speak to you like me, to be sure, be Jesus. And you'll know they were listening to the Baldy Gammon and Tony Gosling.
To me, it's like a total delusion. These people are so deluded by their own egos that they really think that people are going to be convinced by this. We're already at a level of only 30% of people trust what they see in the press nowadays. So as they start to roll out more AI, of course, it's going to go down to 20% and 10%. I mean, if they really want, I mean, this is what George Orwell was talking about in the 1940s when he resigned from the BBC. He said the propaganda doesn't work. Anyway, Suchir Balaji, this guy, he's saying, look, they're stealing loads and loads and loads of information, loads of people's copyright, in order to train this AI, that they're not paying for it at all. And so that's part of the business model, is the theft of people's private information to train the AIs how to work. That's Sam Altman and all these so-called heroes in the States are making their money. So it's great to see the Chinese coming along with a kind of open source version of the same thing.
Tony, we're done for today. That was a power hour. That's what they would say on American telly. Brilliant that. Tony is live on Friday at 5 p.m. Every Friday with some wonderful guests and information you will not hear anywhere else. Thisweek.org.uk, Bilderberg.org. The shows go on YouTube as well. You'll find all the links on the podcast notes later on. Tony is an author and has written some brilliant books, including The Traitors of Arnhem, which becomes more relevant every day of the week, to be honest. Let's be honest about it. So do pick up a copy of The Traitors of Arnhem and support great writers like Tony. Tony, you've got exactly 20 seconds to wrap up, and thanks again.
I want to say is, I'd say to the listeners, have a look at Notebook LM, because when I spoke to David, what had happened is somebody had fed his book into Notebook LM, and it had done a 15-minute précis of his book, and I interviewed him to ask him what he thought of the interview, what he thought of this AI version of his book. And so that's a good place to look. The show has been pre-recorded the last couple of weeks, but I only do it like an hour before the show. Because Dave is on holiday, but we'll be back first Friday in February as a live program once more. And we just try and keep our heads around everything. The good news is about AI is the House of Lords has voted to at least take the side of the people. I mean, isn't it funny? Because Starmer wants to abolish the House of Lords. The House of Commons is all for AI. The House of Lords has said no, no, no. So, but anyway, Starmer's saying this is undemocratic. The House of Lords has got to go. There's your irony. Actually, the House of Lords seems to be more in tune with the public than the elected commons.
Yeah, it's a topic, no doubt, you and I'll pick up as the year develops. Thanks again for today. Brilliant to have you back, mate. Thank you, and I look forward to next time.